Welcome to Heart of Iowa on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host, Greta Anderson. Today's show is an edited recording of a community meeting held in City Council Chambers last Thursday evening concerning the proposed redevelopment of the former middle school property on State Street in Ames, purchased by Breckenridge Land Acquisition, a company from Austin, Texas, that markets exclusively to college students. At issue was the preliminary master plans for three contiguous parcels of land called the South, Middle, and North Parcels. Scott Renault, an engineer for the local firm Fox Engineering, was on hand to answer questions. Fox Engineering has been hired to participate in the design of the development from the aspects of stormwater drainage and other utilities. Those preliminary master plans are available on the city's Planning and Zoning website. Go to cityofames.org/planning and scroll down to the box, What's New? Neighborhood residents' outcry about the original higher density plans put forth by Breckenridge has made the firm back off from its original target of 900 or more beds. The requested zone for the north and middle properties is now residential low density. This designation invokes the code that no more than three unrelated persons can live together. Thus, the units proposed there are three-bedroom units. This is not true for the final parcel, which is proposed as floating zone residential medium density, where the housing and duplexes Breckenridge has planned will contain as many as four and five bedrooms. The total number of beds is now 773. Listeners are encouraged to view the preliminary master plans online at cityofames.org/planning. Scroll down to the box, What's New? In the first 10 minutes of the program, Scott Renault refers extensively to these plans. Again, that website address is cityofames.org/planning.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Scott Renault with Fox Engineering. I'm not an architect. I'm an engineer. We have three parcels, and we call them the north, the middle, and the south. The north parcel is where the track is. The middle parcel is where the middle school actually is. And then the south parcel is the southernmost piece. The north parcel is this piece here. It's about 8.5 acres. We've got Hilltop runs here. This is Franklin and Wilmoth here. The middle parcel is this piece here, where the old middle school sits. We have State, Wilmoth, and then this is an alley, and then this is College Creek here. And then the south parcel abuts actually the middle school parcel here. We run up next to State, up next to the middle school, up next to Wilmoth. Backyards of people on Morningside, thank you, come back this way and then run next to Iowa State University's property here. With that, we'll just start with the north parcel. This is Lincoln Way again, and here's Wilmoth. And so we have 8.5 acres in here. And by RL zoning, which is what we're asking for here, so we're asking for the lowest zone, we have 60 units. And so we've placed units next to Lincoln Way and then kind of spread them out through. We're showing at least 50 feet of buffer on each side here, except on Lincoln Way. We are at the setback here on 25 feet. The parking is all internal, and then we have a large green open space here. The units are three-bedroom units, 10 feet apart, which is the minimum required by building code. There's 1.25 parking spaces minimum per bedroom, and so it has 180 bedrooms, and then we have 225, I believe, parking spots with this one. We are offset a little bit from Hilltop, but we do have a connection to Hilltop. We have two connections on South Wilmoth. We do not have a connection on Lincoln Way nor a connection to Franklin. Let me just go through buffering and fences. There's an existing fence that is on the west side on Franklin, and there's a fence that runs on part of the area next to the homes on Hilltop. There's a fence that goes actually all across the front of Lincoln Way and around part of this residential high density. There's no fence here. So our plan is no fence here. We'll put a fence in here, no fence on Lincoln Way. A fence from the commercial area to the south will remain, and a fence all the way across the south border, with the exception of we'll have an opening here at Hilltop. Landscaping will be a full buffer. It's required by ordinance. So we'll have a full shrub buffer and tree buffer along this edge. And then we have trees interspersed out, and you can kind of, you'll see in the middle parcel how we've done the trees. All right, this is the middle parcel. This is what I would call an alley-loaded idea. This is, again, Wilmoth here. This is State here. And so what we have is the front of the units face Wilmoth, and the parking's in the rear. And again, on State, the front of the units is towards State, and then the parking is in the rear. And then we have an internal street network where this is actually a street, and the units face the street here, and then they face the exterior here. So these are all exteriors. We are showing a clubhouse here. I'll come back to that in a minute. This parcel's a little bit larger. There's 10.9 acres, and I believe there is around 70 units. And these are all three-bedroom units. This is also an RL plan. Really, what we're doing is building single-family houses in the pattern that we're showing here. So this one also has parking at 1.25. We have maintained trip all the way through. Trip is a through street. And then we just have an internal street network for the parking. And again, all the parking's in the rear. We have sidewalks in the front, in the rears with the parking, and on the streets, also on trip. And on the, this is the bike trail right here on State, and we have our own sidewalk that parallels that, so we aren't trying to use the bike trail for access. We're using our own sidewalk. We're showing a clubhouse and a pool in a courtyard area behind these units. The clubhouse is not an allowed use currently in the code. For any residential zone, a clubhouse is not an allowed use unless you do it in a planned unit development. So either we'd have to do this as a planned unit development, or else the code would have to be changed. And there's going to be a request, I believe, by another project to allow a clubhouse as a use in a residential zone. College Creek is down here. The flood line runs this direction here, so we aren't building anything in the flood plain at all. We're not in the floodway. We're not in the flood fringe. This gives you an idea of the intensity of the landscaping. Essentially, we are putting trees at a 40 to 50-foot spacing around the entire parcel. The green trees are actually existing trees that are there already, maybe not quite in their precise location, but those are trees that already exist. And so then the red ones are new trees. And so essentially, we're just fairly intensively putting on street trees. So this is going to be fairly wooded once we're done. So we're doing a lot of trees on the perimeter, a few in the back, but most of these would be what we'd call street trees to kind of have that street tree look that we're looking for. That's planned for all of the developments. This is the one that we've just done a little bit more on just because the existing trees that show up there. With that, let's go to the south one. This one, we're requesting a zoning of FSRM, which is floating zone residential medium density. The reason we're asking for that zone rather than FSRL is everything is exactly the same as FSRL, but there's more variety in these units. When you saw the other ones, they were all the same size and all the same block. They're all three bedrooms. These are two and three and four and five bedroom units mixed together. The four and five bedrooms are houses. The two and three bedrooms are either some sort of a row house or a duplex, which is allowed under FSRL. The only difference in FSRM, we are allowed to use four and five bedrooms. This is, again, State over here. This is Iowa State University here. This is the neighbors on Morningside, and then this is College Creek that runs through the back here. The yellow lines that you see are the floodway lines. There's two of them. One's the floodway, and the other one is the fringe, and those come off the FEMA maps directly. This is the existing bike path that runs through the area, and so what we're showing here is that bike path location does not change. It stays at its current location. We put a 20-foot buffer on the path as well as kind of a minimum distance that we would stay away from the path. The front of the units will face the street. Otherwise, on these, the difference is the units do face the parking area out front. This is a much larger parcel, but we're only developing less than half of it because we are staying off the steep slopes. We are staying out of the trees in general on this parcel. This one has 383 bedrooms. And again, this one also has 1.25 parking spaces per bedroom. Next to the university, we have a minimum we've maintained of 50-foot buffer all the way across, some of which is covered by the bike path already. Our plan here would be for a more robust fence along the back of the property here, and an offer to extend the fence a little bit south on both sides to prevent people leaking around the end of the fence.
You are listening to Heart of Iowa on KHOI Community Radio. That was Scott Renault from the firm Fox Engineering, which has been helping put together site plans for the old middle school property on State Street. Scott's client, Breckenridge Land Acquisition from Austin, Texas, plans to develop the properties into commercial housing for ISU students. Scott was speaking at a public meeting held in council chambers on Thursday, August 8th. The plans that he refers to are available on the City of Ames website. Go to cityofames.org/planning and look for the box, What's New? We now enter the question and answer phase of the evening.
Hi, my name is Sarah, and I live on Arbor Street. My question is, the master plan required to address traffic concerns, such as signals, pedestrian crosswalk lights. There's a current pedestrian crosswalk light that has been deactivated on the corner of State and Arbor, and I was just wondering if the master plan needs to request reactivating that and possibly placing another pedestrian crosswalk light towards the bike path entry into the Arboretum. And also, does the master plan need to address issues such as traffic calming in the proposed development and also traffic calming in adjacent neighborhoods? And I notice in this master plan for the south parcel, there are three crossings of the bike path through the parking lot. This is all related to traffic calming, and I was wondering if you're going to have traffic calming and speed bumps surrounding the bike paths.
I'm just going to step in for a second. I don't have answers for a lot of that, but just to kind of understand the process of where we are tonight with the master plan versus what will actually be required when they submit to the city in the future. Tonight, really, the applicant can speak to the on-site issues. A lot of the things you brought up are relevant to the actual submittal to the city, where they will be required to look at off-site conditions. But tonight, the focus is really on the on-site. That's just kind of a general comment for things that are adjacent to the site or off-site issues, which are articulated as requirements for the master plan process. Will be coming at a later date as submittal requirements to come. But I'll let Scott try and address the rest of the questions tonight.
I'll just address it in the general context of traffic. And you touched on two things. You touched on pedestrian. You touched on traffic itself. So let me go to pedestrian first. It is a single-family subdivision, so it has all the sidewalks front and back so that we have a good pedestrian flow. Because we do believe that quite a few of the residents will walk to Iowa State and walk to Hy-Vee because they're relatively close. And so we want to enhance that. So part of the reason for the fences being where they are or not is to kind of guide that. And so on the north parcel, we've left Lincoln Way and Wilmoth open so that the pedestrians can freely access those two locations and make their way either to the commercial areas to the west or to Iowa State University. On the middle parcel, it's relatively open. But then again, sidewalks on the front, just as you would see in any subdivision, all right? And then on the south, same situation, a little bit different in that it's a little bit more remote, and so we do anticipate that they will probably use the bike path or bikes more for that location, probably less pedestrian use than in the other locations. We're not going to do speed bumps. I'm not a believer in speed bumps. Traffic calming can be accomplished in lots of different ways. Typically what we found on large complexes is traffic from students is relatively diffuse and spread throughout the day. We don't have gluts of traffic, and it doesn't really move that fast just because there are not that many cars in play at any one single time. You can disagree with me, that's fine, but that's my opinion, and we certainly have done our work on other locations the same thing. Overall, the students from a single access point or area are relatively low on the amount of traffic that they generate. As you feel it, you feel them in the town itself because there's a great number of students, and so you can feel when school is in session and not. But from any one point, in any one location, generally students are not a traffic generator. Now, you can argue about speeds and whatnot, but what we typically try to do with that is we put curves in, we restrict widths of streets. One of the reasons for the street trees is to confine the street and make it feel a little bit more confined so that traffic goes slower. Can we go to the middle one? On the middle one, the city's policies for streets are to have through streets and through connections. And so we've got trip going through, and then everything else is a through street and interconnected in a block-type manner. The city does not like cul-de-sacs and dead ends, so for the most part, we've tried to avoid those. From the standpoint of fire protection, we also do not like dead ends, so we can get full access around and in and to the alleys as well. On the north parcel, it's a little bit more isolated, but then it's just an interior loop. And we didn't match up with the two side streets. We don't match up with Letty here in particular. We're a little bit offset of this street as well, because most of the people are going to be using Wilmoth at this location. But again, what we found in the studies that we've done of these, up to about 600 beds, is the traffic generally is, from the students themselves, pretty low at any one point in time. Now, you may argue about the students as far as speed and things like that, but again, a lot of what we do is try to keep the block length short and keep it interconnected so it's easy to get around. If you want to Google traffic calming, that gives you all the various suggestions out there. Most of them are pretty good. The ones that people dislike the most and cause probably more problems are speed bumps and speed humps, because typically you get people speeding up to and, you know, until they get to them. So it's better to do some things that naturally slow the traffic. Every street has what I call the natural speed of the street. In other words, as you drive down the street, you can be comfortable at a certain speed. And what we try to do is put the things into the plan that make the natural feel of the street be close to what the speed limit is, which is 25.
My name is Michael Peterson. I live at 3302 Morningside here in Ames. According to the current Ames Land Use Policy Plan Visions and Goals, Ames seeks to provide biodiversity through the inclusion of plant and animal habitats by enhancing the value of its stream corridors and the linking of existing greenways. I and many other Ames citizens want to know how Breckenridge land acquisition plans to mitigate the potential loss of nearly 64,000 square feet, that's about 1.4 times the size of a football field, of wooded, brushy, and weedy wildlife habitat on the south parcel. Planting nice rows of landscape trees will be of little or no benefit to most wildlife species.
You can look at this in two ways. Number one is how we're doing it and how it would be done if it was single-family homes. And so from the standpoint of a single-family home, this would probably be parceled out and people could mow the complete thing down to the ditch and not have any wildlife areas at all. So from our standpoint is what we're intending to do here, if you want to go to the south one, Jeff, is to really disturb as little of the stream corridor as possible. So we've stayed in the areas that are already pretty much mowed. If you look underneath, you can see that a lot of this area that's light colored here, that's because it was mowed. And so we are not disturbing much of the wooded areas on the site as we can. We're trying to hold that down. The only areas that we really disturb much wooded area is right in here. But with that exception, the rest of it we intend to leave alone. We haven't really discussed a plan for that, but it's not our intent to mow it or have it as a mowed park, but really to leave it pretty much the same as it is.
Sharon Goober, I lived 20 years on State Avenue till recently. Can I have the first slide up, Jeff, that showed the whole neighborhood there? The Land Use Policy Plan, Goal 2C, says Ames seeks a development process that achieves greater compatibility among new and existing development. For comparison, if you look at immediately east of the north parcel, between Wilmoth and State and Letty North, that's a comparable size to the north parcel. And at one point, you had a proposal, N1, that had platted lots and 33 units on it. There are 35 units or homes with lots on the neighborhood that's to the east. Why is a proposal like N1 not in your master plan?
Well, we had numerous meetings with the neighborhood group, and we offered many things with the idea we were trying to keep 950 bedrooms. And as time went on, this one's about 780 or 90, something like that, maybe not even quite that high. So we eliminated a lot of bedrooms in the context of trying to accomplish all the goals. And when we did that, the north parcel needed to have more density, and I do believe the north parcel needs more density. It's on an arterial street on Lincoln Way, which is not appropriate for any sort of single-family housing. It's probably more appropriate for commercial. And because of that, that parcel, to my mind, has less issues with more density than the others. We would have liked to have probably put more density on that, but we put as much density as possible on that piece in order to balance the fact that on the south parcel in particular, we're not putting more density, because we de-densified that a lot. We went down from 500 or 600 units, depending on how you wanted to look at it, down to 380.
Hi, my name is Judy Lemish, and I live at 327 South Maple in Ames. I guess this is a continuation of her question on the bike path, and you were saying you want to put trees along the side a little bit. To me, it seems like your response about trees might make more problems.
We've got three crossings on this plan, and as you can see, what we've tried to do on each one is you want a 90-degree crossing for the best safety and sight distance. So we've got 90 degrees here, 90 degrees here, and 90 degrees here. Now, the bike path's twisting a little bit as it goes through, so we're not exactly perfect, but we're about as close as we can be. The area that we're showing is actually, we talked about that distance that's on each side of this. That's the city's full easement. So the city really controls that easement. So if the city doesn't want trees in there, perfectly understandable. Generally, the requirements for trees next to a bike path are you generally want to be at least 4 feet off the edge of the bike path with a tree. But again, the city controls that easement, so it's neither here nor there. And what we would do is treat these like we would treat any intersection, which is there's a view triangle, and we'd keep that open so that people can see the traffic going through. The State Street is the same situation. That's part of the city's general plan when we go in to do any kind of thing that we have to accommodate view triangles and view safety. There's criteria that are laid out for that, depending on the speed of both intersections, and with the hill and so on and so forth. We haven't talked about in the detail as far as that goes, because we talked about traffic plan, but we haven't talked about stop signs, yields, or whatnot. My preference generally is not to do stop signs, but to do yields instead. Pedestrian yields are something like you've seen up at the hospital now, where they have the green sign that says you must yield to pedestrians. You can do a couple of different variants of that. Those are legal. The idea is if you don't make people stop, then they don't have this incentive to go faster in between the locations, and so we try to keep traffic moving by clearly stating who has the right-of-way instead. It's not only a traffic study, but it's also kind of negotiation with city traffic staff about what measures that we'll employ. That comes afterwards.
Barbara Pleasance, 516 Lynn Avenue. The City Council voted unanimously to require that the master plan for all three parcels include subdividing the property so that every building is on a separate lot. Proposals N1, M1, and M5 through 9 showed platting. Why are these plans not platted?
There's multiple ways to accomplish what the council requested. And what we are doing here is each house unit itself will be sits on its own parcel of ground. And so in the future, if this does have to revert to single family, then every parcel will be saleable on its own as part of a condominium regime for each house. That's been done. I've done it several places in town. There's lots of subdivisions that are done that way. Then they share everything else in common. So we don't have to do a specific lot that's bigger than the house, but just the house itself.
My name is Susie Petra, and my question is, what does the master plan show in terms of specific types of barriers to prevent residents from walking into the ISU research fields, College Creek Greenway, and neighbors' adjacent properties?
Barriers to College Creek, our intent is to leave it relatively open at this point in time. I mean, that's purely negotiable. I don't know that we have thought anything in great detail about that, but probably very little fence in that area. Leave it open so that things can move around. As far as with Iowa State, is our intent would be to put a relatively serious fence on next to Iowa State's property on the south so that there would be no access into the research fields. There's a couple of other things that we've planned as far as that goes. You're on the south. when we're managing drainage from the site, what we'd like to do is swale this area. In addition to being a 50-foot buffer, we're going to make it a little bit uncomfortable to be in there. We're going to make it lower than the rest as a swale, have it be a little bit wet, have prairie in there, so that really that we'll have some additional disincentives, we'll say, to even go that direction. All right? And then the last one is the neighbors, which we haven't thought, I guess, in a great amount of detail. Most of the neighbors already have fences here already. Again, if anybody's going to get there from here over to there, then they've got to, they've got to go across the creek. And having been down there numerous times, it's not the easiest creek to get across. If you want to go to the middle, Jeff, our intent here really not to do any fences at all. The only fence we have really discussed maybe doing much of is on the north, next to the alley, but we have a sidewalk there. We're trying to funnel people either to Wilmoth or to State. So this one is fairly open in the fact that there's no fences. And again, we're putting the vehicles and the parking all in back so that really we aren't going to see any parking on South Wilmoth. Of course, there's no parking on State as it is, and so we're trying to make sure that everything just kind of moves internally. And then on the north, there's already existing fences there, so we're not changing anything that is there. We were planning on adding a fence across here just because we've got fences on two sides. And then we were actually going to fence ourselves off. One of the gentlemen asked what this area is. This is residential high density in this location here. This isn't our property, not part of the plan. We are keeping a fence here because they aren't probably the world's best neighbors either.
My name is Denise Rothschild. Given that the pool and clubhouse appears to be a source of noise and large parties with non-resident guests invited at other Aspen Heights locations, does there have to be a pool and clubhouse at this location?
The clubhouse is probably a necessary thing in that that's where the management offices are. There's probably some level of recreation inside the clubhouse. It's how they kind of keep track of where the maintenance facilities are and everything else. So the clubhouse is required. The pool, on the other hand, is, I would say, a negotiable item. We do think it's important that the residents have recreation space, but how that recreation space is and what it is probably still up to negotiation. Let me reiterate what I said earlier. The clubhouse is not an allowed use in this zone or any other residential zone, and it's only allowed in planned unit developments, which it's been used quite often. So in order to put the clubhouse on any of these parcels is going to require a zoning text amendment.
Martin Tepley, there's a concern for visitor parking in all three lots. How does the master plan provide for a sufficient visitor parking on each of the three parcels?
The city's requirements for parking are one parking space per bedroom, and we've exceeded that. We're in the 1.25 to 1.3. We could probably provide a little bit more parking by squeezing some more in here and there if we wanted to, so we could exceed that by a lot more. We've done some parking studies for large complexes in the range of 600 beds, and what we're finding is that typically 15 to 20% of the spots are vacant almost all the time, and that's on a one-bedroom count, all right? I don't know that I can necessarily explain why that is, other than what it means to me is 15 to 20% of the people don't have cars for whatever reason. Due to the proximity to the university or bus system, or they like to bike or walk, or they have a social responsibility, they feel they don't want to have a car, we're seeing that almost everywhere. So the parking is well in excess, I think, even if we did the city's requirement of one. So we're at 1.25, so we have a lot of additional parking, I think, beyond that.
How is this going to be patrolled for, say, things like games weekend, like football games and things of that nature? I know just from being a resident in that area that any time we have any kind of a major event with Iowa State, Wilmoth and Leddy are just packed with cars on both sides. Are you guys going to have something in place, like a management that says, hey, you get a parking sticker or something to make sure that those 1.25 aren't being exploited from people, say, out of town or out of visiting or something like that, to where it is going to be a congestion problem?
We're not close to really any Iowa State facilities that you're going to want to get quote-unquote free parking on. Having gone to games for 25 years, I know where all the good spots are at, and this isn't one of them. Ames Police Department participates in the actually in the planning of this facility as well. So we talk about lighting, we talk about how the place is managed, and also there's a way that they monitor the issues then that they give us feedback. And so what it tries to do with that is keep the channels of communication open between the police department and the developer so that those things can be addressed rather than an emergency basis just as they go along. So they are invited to the planning process when we go into that.
My name is Maria Tepley. With over one-third of the area of the south parcel covered in impermeable surface, what on the master plan identifies the flood management systems utilized to mitigate the increase of water runoff?
The city has fairly stringent requirements for that, and so not all the details of that plan are shown on here. Those are things that we kind of add in as the development occurs, but essentially what we do with an area is we do it in a couple different ways. We try to maximize the amount of infiltration. We also maximize the amount of depressions. We talked about how I was going to make this low in order to make it less attractive for people to access Iowa State property. One of the reasons is we're putting drainage in that direction as well, trying to hold it back. So we have depressions here and here, and we typically just depress everything and try to slow it down and clean it up before it leaves the site. Now, the details of the plan are not there, but as part of the process in the development plan, there's a full-blown stormwater management plan, and we talk about how all those issues are accomplished in detail. And the city's requirements are relatively stringent. We're really not allowed to discharge at a rate higher than what it is now. Typically, we do better than that because the systems that Fox Engineering particularly employs are ones that clean the water up and slow it down before it's discharged. My background, you should know, is a little bit different. I'm actually an ag engineer by training. My license to practice is civil. My specialty is drainage. I've done about 1,500 drainage projects of various types and whatnot. So we're pretty good at figuring out how to drain it nice and slow and clean and less than what it was before.
Just a couple quick remarks because my question was about drainage, but Scott, I guess I would like to share with you that the plan as presented appears to respond to the university's request to minimize the impact to agricultural research in the plots by including the fencing, providing the 50-foot buffer, and controlling light spillover. Most of the rest of our concerns are going to be off-site impacts, and we'd like to continue to address those through later discussions.
Just a quick comment to Kathy is, don't misunderstand, this is a master plan. There are a lot of details that have to be worked out. But we cannot work out details until we kind of settle out to what this is going to look like and how it's framed and how many bedrooms we're dealing with. We kind of have a general idea of how it's going to work, and we know what our issues are. And you have your own issues, obviously, as being the neighbors. But in general, some of the detail has to come later.
You are listening to Heart of Iowa on KHOI Community Radio. We are listening to Scott Renault of the local firm Fox Engineering field questions from Ames residents about the development of the old middle school property. This property has been bought by Breckenridge Land Acquisition, a Texas firm that specializes in student housing in college towns. Back to the questions.
My name is Sarah. I live on Wood Street. Regarding the street trees, how does the master plan ensure street tree diversity among genuses? Is there going to be some kind of threshold of the percentage of ash species so we don't end up with white ash, green ash, you know, black ash, blue ash, and then we lose all of them versus ash, oak, maple, Kentucky coffee tree, you know, birch?
There's a requirement for in a residential zone to have a street tree planting plan. Now, typically, we follow that only in general terms, but in this case, since all the units are laid out and we're in control of everything, then the trees are ours to specify. And I'm trying to remember the last time I used an ash tree, probably at least 10 years ago. If you look at all the subdivisions that I do now, we are using almost 100% natives. Lots of maples for color. Oaks, we don't use quite as much, primarily because the city requires the oaks to be much larger than is easy to transplant. So if we use oaks, we use those in places that the city doesn't dictate the size. We use honey locusts, sycamores, almost the full native branch of trees, and I like to mix them up, and we have a fairly large variety. They'll probably be in the range of a dozen different trees used on the site. when we talk about the shrubs, I'm kind of adding to your question maybe, but on the shrubs, we're typically going to use fairly big and robust shrubs that are full screens that grow fast. And probably the best thing for that is sumac. And so we're going to use some sumac in the borders unless somebody has some problem with sumac locally.
Joanne Pfeiffer. I'd like to ask, what is the plan to protect and enhance the air, the sky, quiet streets, things like night sky viewing, to do night sky viewing, noise management, and long-term, reliable, safe sources of clean air?
Let's see here. We'll start with clean air, which to me is we want to really enhance the ability for people, and this is one of the advantages of this site, to use to walk and to bike and use buses instead of use cars. Given our proximity to the university and most of the clientele being to the university, it's our view that that's part of it. So we're going to maximize as much of that as we can so there's less cars on the road, period. As the sky goes, the city has a dark sky lighting ordinance, which we intend to follow. It's not, I don't think, anything hard to follow. We do have, everybody has some desire for some security, but the city's requirements for lighting also balance that. We will be dark sky compliant because that's what the city requires. And then we also typically, if we have to go another step, is we can also shield and buffer the lights so that they don't shine in certain areas. Which we just essentially use a dark sky compliant light with a shield, and then we can actually adjust the shields so that we can cut light off to certain areas. And so we can drop light down to 0 foot candles on the edges. So that's our general intent for the light. For quiet streets, you know, again, as long as we can keep them out of the cars, we probably are going to have less noise and less of that. And then noise management goes to just how the facility's managed in of itself, plus this earlier discussion about the pool and some of the outdoor recreation areas.
My name is Duffy Lohr. That's my nickname. I would like to know how this plan satisfies the Ames vision for new neighborhoods being those that are connected physically and psychologically to the surrounding existing neighborhood.
Well, again, on what we've tried to do in so much that you know what our clientele is, they're students, but we are putting them in a unit that looks very much like a single-family house. These are cottage style. They'll have multiples of color, multiples of finish, and it's a really high-quality look from the outside. We're going to heavily landscape so that it blends in with the rest of the landscaping that's done by everybody in those neighborhoods. So it's going to look very residential. The difference is going to be it's going to have students there. And so So that's the physicality. So I think from the standpoint of how this looks, this is the most different thing that I've ever done as far as is having very much a residential single-family look for a student housing project. So the look, I think, is there. The psychological thing, I don't know if that's up to me. You know, that's a little bit up to the people that are living there, and it's up to the neighbors that are next door, how much they want to interact with the students. You know what, I've done tons of subdivisions, and I've heard people complain about fences and dogs and cats and loud neighbors and basketball courts and swimming pools in the backyards. I've heard about everything. So there's always a little bit of you got to get used to who your neighbors are regardless of where you're at. So as far as setbacks and how it looks, our intent is to kind of try to, you know, treat the neighborhood well. Are we a little more dense than the neighborhood? Yes, we are. That's already been pointed out.
My question has to do with the sanitary sewers especially. Have you got any idea where you're going to connect those into the existing sanitary sewers? Because the sanitary sewers run on the north side of the College Creek behind my backyard and all along in there. I also want to know whether the ongoing water main project in our neighborhood will be affected by this.
Well, I'll answer the first one. We're going to use the existing sanitary that's out there. All these locations have probably multiple locations which we can hook to sanitary sewer. The one that probably has the least issues as far as sanitary sewer is going to be the one that runs on College Creek because that's a large diameter one. These systems are all new and tight, so typically we're providing relatively low amount of waste in relation to what the current neighborhood is. The current neighborhood, the way we look at it is the amount of flow from a new neighborhood is probably about 10% of what a wet weather flow is from your neighborhood, because your pipes are old, they leak because of the materials they were made out of and how they were made and how long they've been there and tree roots and all those happy things. So new systems are tight, so we don't really provide that much sanitary load. And generally, if the city has an issue with any particular sanitary, that's one of the things they bring up to me. And if we can go to another location that doesn't provide some sanitary issue, then we do that. Nobody has said to me they had any sanitary sewer issues, other than maybe, you know, when you get from severe rains, which, again, since our system is tight and just providing the waste from this location itself, it's probably relatively small. In general, if you did all of this together, one 8-inch sewer could handle all three of these together, kind of the relationship and the size. Most of the sewers in the neighborhoods are all 8s. The one that's down in College Creek, I don't remember the size of that, but it's pretty large. On the water main, no, the city's still doing the water main project. You're going to be done. The only thing that we do is connect to it and loop through. When I say loop through, we add in, and so we connect to other water mains. We actually make the system more robust by our construction, by tying in alternate locations and sources of water.
Mine's a quick one, Charles Gilbert. What are the chances of keeping Hilltop dead end at the state football field?
Well, that kind of goes to what the fire department wants more than what we want. When we have a certain number of units, can't remember the requirement, we'll say 20 units. If we go over 20 units, we have to have more than one access. And so the way we've framed this is we have multiple accesses to all these properties because we're required to for fire access and then just for general transportation. However, I know that my client does not object to a gate at that location if that was desired by the city as a whole.
You mean the fire department's going to come clear around Franklin to the Hilltop to get in there?
No, I'm saying that if they wanted to come through Hilltop, that the gate's there, they just open the gate and go. There's actually a gate there already. It's a sliding gate, but our intent was that's maybe not a gate that everybody would be happy with.
I own 105 South Plymouth, right on the corner. What are the plans on that corner? It was my great-grandparents. I lived there for 12 years.
There's no plans. We don't own that property, so there's no change in...
Would you like to buy that property?
I'm not the guy to ask that.
Yeah, I know nothing about building a subdivision. You do. So this place is going to get new water, new electricity, new sewage. Who pays for that? You or the City of Ames taxpayers?
There's no city money in this project whatsoever at this time.
So you pay for it all?
Yeah, all the interior water, streets, storm sewer, sanitary sewer, electric, and everything is paid by the developer in the same way that we do anything.
Okay.
The only thing that you may see the city spend money on, and it goes back to this traffic issue, is when we do the study, we may have, say, well, here's a problem that you already had, and we're going to make it worse, and the city may choose and elect to fix that problem at the same time. Typically, what we do is we look at the city staff, the engineering staff, you know, we talk closely. I've been here a long time. We try to figure out the problems that are there so that, you know, we can resolve those issues before the development is finalized. But there is no city money in this project at all.
How do student compounds, the Berwick-style houses, fit in our neighborhood? It's a low-density neighborhood. And you want to put student compounds there with so many students? And why does Breckenridge assume they don't have to conform with the city council's request? One lot to one single-family residence for low-density housing or zoning.
The way we have shown this, it complies with every city ordinance and rule.
I don't think so.
It does. You may not like how we're doing it, because there's more than one way than just showing a lot for every house. As I talked about earlier, you can condoize it. The RL zone allows 7.26 units per acre. That's units. So that's a house per acre. Okay. And a duplex is counted as two units. And so the reason that we have the number that we're showing on the north and the middle has to do with what's allowed on that amount of area. So we're using the city's maximum allowed density. So is it the same as the neighborhood? No. Is it allowed under the ordinances? Yes. The south parcel is different. We really just kind of went around and took out the stuff that we didn't want to develop. We didn't want to develop the slopes. We didn't want to develop the bike trail. And we had certain other criteria. And so it's set up a little bit different, and it's not obviously not nearly as dense. But we're allowed to use a different unit. And so we have fewer buildings, but we have more students per building. If the desire is to have less units per acre, you go from 7.26 down to 5, then the only way that we can accomplish that is to have a different zoning that allows the developer to have 4 and 5 bedroom units. And then you would have more diversity in the units, and you'd have a different look to the area.
Susie Peter again. Does the master plan provide for a safe place in case of tornado for these 770-some students?
At this point, none of the units have basements, and there's been no discussion of doing what I would call safe rooms within the buildings. Typically what you do is you go to a bathroom location that has no windows, and that's where you're at. And I'm probably one of the few people in this audience that actually lived in a house in Ames that didn't have a basement. And frankly, that never really bothered me too much. And I've been through 2 tornadoes, by the way. My farms were hit by tornadoes when I was a kid. You know, you just find a safe interior space, and that's where you stay. The advantage of not having basements is you don't have water in your basement. So,
because of the recent tragedies in Oklahoma, we have learned that the one room in the house does not always suffice for severe weather. So my question again is how this plan shows parents that there is adequate shelter for their children during severe weather.
Duff, you were at the meeting where Pete England with the university answered this question on their own. Their situation is very much the same. They provide tornado-safe areas within a building, but they don't put them underground. And you go to the places that have the least impact from flying glass, and that's what happens. To me, it's just as I told you, I lived in a house without a basement. That's kind of a personal decision. If tornadoes are really hot on your mind and you want protection from a basement, then you should rent somewhere else.
Sharon Goober. Scott, you've answered questions by alluding to what would be done, but it's not drawn in the master plan. When you talk about how you will mitigate flooding, and with the sweep of the hand, you talk about depressions, and you sweep your hand, and you talk about robust fencing and relatively serious fencing. I mean, to me, nothing comes to mind about that.
Okay.
In fact, when you talk about not mowing down, there's a greenway down there. I think part of the master plan is that you draw in areas that are going to be protected. Don't see anything that's drawn in. In fact, if it's not on the master plan, anything that you said has no guarantee. If it's on the master plan, then we know that it's guaranteed to happen. And I know that you can change the master plan before we get to other processes. Will we see master plans that have things that you're talking about in answer to questions that the neighborhood and the citizens of Ames seriously want to know the answers are going to be in fact? Will you put those in the master plan? These have been items that we've discussed to be included in the master plan. And so, again, the question is, will we see them specifically on the master plan?
Understand that the master plan is, in general, not to be a detailed document. We don't do every detail, and certain things are left later. And so some things are talked in generalities, and some things are talked in specifics. Let's take the fencing, for example. When I say a robust fence, to me, it means a 6-foot chain link. However, Iowa State's sitting there, and they may say, no, we want an 8-foot chain link fence. And I'm going to say the city ordinance doesn't allow an 8-foot chain link fence. It only allows a 6-foot. And so there's some of this give and take between the university, the city, and the developer that has to occur. And so there's some detail that doesn't get worked out until later. It's always visible from the standpoint of one step is built on the next, in that we always are adding detail, adding things as we go along. Some things are easy to specify early, like if you wanted to specify fence, since we know where fences are basically on the properties, we could specify those to some kind of great detail. But drainage is a little bit different in that we haven't done detailed grading plans. We don't even know that the council is going to approve this plan in the format that it is in. And so ultimately the council may say, well, gee, you know, I'll just go back to the fence issue. Is really, we don't want a 6-foot chain link there. It's going to look terrible. We want a 4-foot farm fence. Well, that's fine. That's what council wants, and that's what council will get. But some of those details get worked out as we go. But don't misunderstand that they change. In fact, it's exactly the opposite. In what we're showing here has really no flexibility at all as we move forward. As we move forward, the layouts stay the same. Some of those other things stay the same, and we just keep adding detail on top of it. The city ordinances dictate in great detail most of the issues that you've talked about. Fence and stormwater, sanitary sewer, water, and traffic are all very prescriptive of what we have to do. And so it's just a matter of working through those as we get from one step to the next. The first step is the master plan in preparation for rezoning. Then we do the rezoning itself, actually, which then may have certain conditions on it that are attached to it, and then we just keep moving forward. But we typically do not finish certain things until we actually know what we're going to build, which at this point is not, confirmed. I mean, we wanted to get some comment yet tonight. There's still some detail to be added before we go and submit these plans. They've not been officially submitted as master plans yet. We're still tweaking things and making a few adjustments here and there, but they'll be submitted shortly after this meeting with some more detail that you're not probably seeing tonight. You know, the next process that'll happen here is we'll submit the master plans. Staff will review them and deal with them. And Kelly, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but we'll submit this. The city will accept it. The staff will look at it. They'll have some things that they want addressed or dealt with. Then it goes to Planning and Zoning Commission, and then it goes for the initial step of really the rezoning, and then it goes to council. And just as it's available online before, it'll be available online through all the steps. And so you'll get to see more detail as you go along.
Why do you want to build 4- and 5-bedroom houses if the city only allows 3 unrelated people to 1 resident?
In the RM zone and in the FSRM zone, you can have 4- and 5-bedroom apartments.
But only 3 unrelated people?
No, you can have 4 and 5 unrelated people if you are in the RM zone or the FSRM zone. I've told my client this, is there's no way we're going to get much more than 800 with the plans that we have here. The north plan and the middle plan are, that's all we can build. There is no more. There's no way to add any. Obviously, we could subtract, but we can't add. On the south parcel, we may add a couple, we may subtract a couple, and that goes as we go through the plan if we have some issues that have to be resolved one way or the other. When they have what the developer desires as far as a mix of 2, 3, 4, and 5 bedrooms, it's about 25% of each. Actually, probably a little more skewed to 2s and 3s, less 4s and 5. It ends up being about 3.5 bedrooms per unit is their ideal.
So it sounds like we've gotten kind of the end of the questions. So last on the agenda was just my wrap-up, and really there isn't a large wrap-up. As Scott said, he's intending to submit his application pretty soon. The city has not received any application materials to us yet. We have done no formal city review by any department on the application. So that is really the next step for the developers, to submit it to the city. When that is submitted, we do plan to alert the neighborhood representatives that have been interfacing with us so that they can spread the word that the plans are available. And then obviously when the project is ready to go to public hearing, we'll have public hearing notices, and I'm sure there'll be more publicity about that than just a public hearing notice that you would get in the mail. Any questions about process, feel free to contact us. That's what we're here for. And when the application comes in, feel free again to ask us about how it goes through the system and what's going on. But I mean, Karen is the project planner. I'm available as well. Feel free to contact us if you have any questions about interpretation of the process or anything like that.
That last voice was Kelly Diekman, the new Director of Planning and Housing for the City of Ames. And this has been Heart of Iowa on KHOI Community Radio. We've been listening to an edited recording of a public meeting concerning the old middle school property on State Street and the plans of Breckenridge Land Acquisition of Austin, Texas, to develop it into commercial housing for ISU students. The other voice was that of Scott Renault, an engineer at the local firm Fox Engineering, which has been hired by Breckenridge to help develop the site plan. Many thanks to station engineer Richard Morrison for collecting the audio and for engineering the show. Greta Anderson edited the content to fit the 55-minute format. Our theme song is The Fisherman by Leo Kottke. Thanks for listening, and see you again on the radio.